Blog Talk Radio.
Hey folks, this is Rambo Rouse and Rich Bergeron. I'm trying to connect it with Tony the Tornado Panic Pal. Got a pretty straightforward show tonight, no guest. We do have some discussions about the big UFC lawsuit. Three fighters, three big fighters from the UFC, Kung Lee, still with the UFC, and a couple guys no longer with the UFC, Nate Quarry and John Fitch suing the UFC, so it's a big story, as well as, of course, lots of UFC events, a couple ones over the weekend, and some coming up.
Call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 2215-6058. Automatic.
Okay. Lawsuit to discuss. We have the UFC Ultimate Fighter finale just went down last Friday. Also, Cain Velasquez, actually his former opponent, Junior Dos Santos, had a pretty interesting match with Stipe Miocic over the weekend on Saturday as well. We had some boxing to talk about. Plenty to discuss, to say the least. So, action-packed show, even though we don't have a guest. We will have Tom here on shortly, I'm sure. And we'll get Tony on any minute as well. So. Connecting with Tony.
Yo.
There he is.
I think you guys didn't get my text message.
No.
Yeah, I said I was going to call in. I had a horrible customer service experience tonight. I had to curse somebody out.
Oh, okay. So you're going
to
call?
I work in customer service. And I had to be nice to people.
Yeah. Okay.
But I'm literally at like 5 minutes from my house.
Okay, so you want to call back?
No, I'm cool. I'm like 5 minutes away, so.
All right.
I thought when you called in, I would have been in the other store. So I was 20 minutes behind schedule.
All right, now we have a full crew. We have our sidekick on board.
All right. Here we are, gentlemen. Let's get after it. Good time tonight, huh?
Actually, for about the next 3 minutes, we have more than a full crew, because I'm on speakerphone with the person I'm chauffeuring in the car.
Oh, okay.
Would you like to say hello to the camera?
Hello.
She said hello.
Hello.
All right, well, we got a lot to cover. We have, obviously, the big news. Tom sent me the first inkling of this lawsuit going on against the UFC. Last I heard, the UFC is trying to say they haven't even served yet. It's real description of the book. but it shouldn't take long to make sure that's publicly recorded when they do get served. But basically, Kung Lee, John Fitch, and Nate Quarry are all suing the UFC, and they're looking for a class of fighters to join them. And they're claiming all kinds of monopoly and what's called monopsony violations, and basically saying the UFC is a cartel that needs to be stopped because they're sucking all the money out of the fighters. There's some claims in this lawsuit that I don't know. I mean, they're loose, loosely based on facts, I think. But they try to claim that 90% of the income, at least up to 90% of the income from every file or card that the UFC holds goes to the UFC rather than the fighters. So that's true. That'd be pretty crazy. But I just don't know where this lawsuit is getting their numbers. They don't really explain that. But it's big news because, you know, they're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, and if they get enough people to join, the predecessor to a fighter's union. One of the guys, she's actually on one of the law, involved in one of the law firms, is actually a guy who has tried to start a MMA union already. Very interesting stuff, and we'll have to see where it goes. But, you know, the UFC's got pretty good lawyers, so.
Yeah, sure. Now, Rich, if you have insomnia tonight, there's a couple threads on the Underground, which I just didn't have time to really delve into in detail. But there's a legal opinion, and then just quite a few articles on it. It's shook things up, so we'll see what happens. But you're right. I feel optimistic a little bit, but then I think of what they're up against and the billions of dollars and the stuff that the UFC's got away with in the past. That we'll see.
I mean, it paints a pretty brutal picture of who these guys are. Talking about world domination all the time. And They're proud of killing other organizations in the past. But, you know, they do really have, I mean, really great master contracts. They have very limiting contracts. And, you know, the FTC didn't find anything in their investigation of the UFC, but that just means there's nothing criminal. You know, you can make a civil case out of almost anything. You know, as we know, because there's labels on our coffee now. We get it from McDonald's. You spill your coffee on yourself. You can still sue the people who made you the coffee. So.
Sure. And you know, someone brought up a very interesting fact about this sponsorship situation. That in NASCAR, they have quite a bit of that, but they're not restricted to just one sponsor. And likewise, it's kind of the same situation with golf. Now, they may have a tournament sponsored by one company, but they're not telling the golfers who they can be sponsored by. So this is really unprecedented to my knowledge. I mean, if you guys know of any other sports where this is happening, let me know, because I don't. I've thought about this, and it's kind of a monopoly there, too.
You guys know I've been saying for a while, the UFC is opening itself up for this type of class action lawsuit. I didn't think it was going to come this soon, actually. I was very surprised. But, you know, this whole thing ticks out issues like that uniform deal. But I think the uniform deal was virtually the last straw. And I think it was why they filed this when they did. Because I think a lot of fighters, before they start getting the money from this deal, are going to just get pissed off based on the way it's framed. And already they did the same thing with this deal that they've done with some other shady situations like Zions. And as soon as the Fertittas buy into Zions, who do they go and get to rep Zions? Ronda Rousey and John Jones. What do they do now that they got Reebok? They got Ronda Rousey and John Jones wearing Reebok, signed up exclusively with Reebok. And John Jones lost a Nike agreement because of his shoving match with Danny Cormier. So.
Well, it's not just that, Rich. From what I understand, quite a few fighters have lost a lot of their sponsors already. And this other deal doesn't go into effect until July of next year, as you know. and a lot of these guys have lost out. So I don't know if they'll be able to keep going. I mean, and the UFC prides itself on this level playing field, which I'm so sick of that I could throw up. But, you know, now we've got drug testing. It's a level playing field. But if some guys don't have sponsors and only the champs do and the champs can train all day and the other guys can't, where's the level playing field? I'm sure I'm seeing it wrong. And some UFC show will explain it on the Underground. But,
Well,
Merry
the
Christmas,
more,
Tom.
The more interesting aspect of this lawsuit is where they, you know, take into account the fact that, you know, they own your lifetime likeness rights. And not only that, but if you go to another organization, they don't even allow you to use the label UFC. If you're a former UFC champion, you can't go around labeling yourself former UFC champion to sell tickets. Unless you have express written permission from the UFC. So, very screwed up situations involved in some of these contracts. And it does sound to me like they have a legitimate claim. I mean, you got three different huge law firms that have been involved in huge multi-million dollar settlements. So they're going to get something, I think, out of this. And they're going to make the UFC spend a lot of money. And whatever they win is going to be tripled if they actually have to go to trial and win a judgment at trial. So it just gives the UFC a huge incentive to settle this before a lot of fighters pack on the names, you know, and increase the list tenfold. But, you know, the problem with that is you have these guys that are in these other organizations who are maybe trying to get back to the UFC for that big payday. And the one thing the lawsuit does point out, whether you look at it good or bad, is it says that the UFC has the kind of pay structure that other companies can't compete with. So, literally, you know, if you want to make any real money, you have to work for the UFC. So, UFC would say, well, that's a good thing. But these guys are trying to say that's a bad thing. Because these guys can't go anywhere else, and then when the UFC throws them out, they can't make a living.
Now, how sad is that? Because the minimum with the UFC, as I understand right now, the minimum wage is $8,000 to show, $8,000 to win. It was $6,000 a few years ago. They bumped it up now in their generosity. And so the other shows can't even do that. How pathetic.
Right. Mm-hmm. We had some boxing over the weekend. We had Amir Khan beating up on Devin Alexander. Wasn't a very entertaining or exciting fight. Didn't make me think Amir Khan had to fight Floyd Mayweather next, that's for sure. And there was no announcement after the fight that Floyd Mayweather is going to fight Khan. But actually, the bigger fight I thought last week was our former guest, Antonio Tarver. The night of our broadcast, I think he was on later on that night. Totally forgot that card was rescheduled. And if you missed it, you missed another incident of Teddy Atlas blowing his lid.
Oh, I saw that. You know, it's funny because I got the notification that the picture starting right after we got off the air with our guest last week. So as soon as we got off the air, I said, you know, plays are starting on whatever channel it was, ESPN2. So I ran downstairs and I put them on. And I got to see part of the fight before Teddy Atlas was put out. And it was an okay fight. The one fighter dominated, but he didn't really press the action as much as I was hoping he would have to finish the show. But he said, you know, he went after it. And I remember right before the decision was read, he came here to make a statement, to outclass, and to get a win. Something to dominate and to get a win. And they said, well, he got two of the three. And it was almost like they were like leading up to what was about to happen, and then he read the decision. And Teddy Atlas, I mean, I've never seen him lower like that. I thought he was going to croak. I thought he was going to have a heart attack.
And, Tony, this is a good conversation because we have so much time tonight. We can talk about whatever the hell we want, but you said you have a PlayStation 3. Now, do you have the game Champion yet? Fight Night Champion?
I do, actually. I got that one. I bought my PlayStation for myself last year as a Christmas gift for myself And that was one of the two games I got, and one of the only two games I still have. Fight Night Champion, and then one of the WWE 2K14 or whatever they were. And Fight Night Champion, like, the storyline is kind of cool, but I don't enjoy the gameplay as much.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that the scope design is the way it is. And you have Teddy Atlas doing the announcing. I mean, it's very interesting the way they have it set up. I like the way they do the stories with the ESPN set and everything like that. And Teddy actually has commentary about some of the bad things going on in the sport, because there's one fight you have to fight with. The ref is on the take for the other guy, so
Right.
Talk to the guy's body. The ref is calling you for a low blow. So,
you get to the body.
And then on top of that, you have the whole setup of the storyline is boxing is controlled by the mob. You have to work your way up in the sport after you get thrown in prison because you won't work for a mob guy. and on top of that, have the refs on the take and the judges' decisions up for debate and all that.
You
have to fight your brother, and then you throw that fight, and then you play the guy who beats up your brother as the champion because he got your shot. So it's like it's showing the image of boxing as the most corrupt sport there is. No.
Yeah, I feel like as soon as I got up to the last guy, Isaac Frost, then I never beat him. That was like I'm not really that good with video games. I never really have been. Like, I'll play some of them for fun, but like I never beat Mike Tyson's punch out, and that's like Mike Tyson. As soon as he hits you, you're down, and you're pretty much like out.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Mike Tyson could not beat himself on my Tyson show. Played about 2 months. Not too long ago. But anyway, the point I mentioned that whole Teddy Atlas thing was the fight was pretty lopsided. To give it to the Mexican guy, I think the fight was close enough to go in like a hometown cooking deal. I don't know what the deal was, but as far as challenging it, just overturning it, making it a no contest, but that was total bullshit. And Teddy had every right to blow a gasket there. And he just kept talking about how corrupt the sport was, and somebody's got to come forward and do something. Some kind of congressman with some kind of power has got to come forward and just make some rules. This can't happen.
How many years have we heard this, though? I mean, I totally agree with every word he says, but it's so frustrating, I hate to even think about it. How many decades have we heard this?
Yeah, sure. I mean,
those decisions
have gone back long before any of us have been around.
Yeah, even me.
Yeah. And, of course, the big topic of discussion going around is... before I mention Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather, obviously big news this week, whether it's going to happen or not. Manny has actually come out and tweeted, "Floyd, don't be a boxing humbug. Let's make this fight happen." Mayweather actually commented that he wants this fight next on his broadcast of Mayweather promotions over the weekend. That was on Showtime. So I think both guys want it, but before I get into that whole debate and discussion again, I did want to mention our former guest, Antonio Tarver, got a big win against Jonathan Banks. It wasn't very impressive, I don't think. It didn't really show him at the top of his game, but he pretty much, he thinks he's there. So he's calling out all the big heavyweight champs already. Even though the guy he beat... Teddy Atlas kept saying, he's basically a glorified sparring partner and better trainer than he is a fighter right now. is Randy Klitschko. He's basically saying he's sticking to the day job. Not a very good compliment. He didn't really seem very aggressive at all on the play. Like, he was paid to just kind of go out there and play the part. Not saying he was, but that's the way it looks. So, I hope Tarver steps up his game next time out and doesn't really try to climb right up to the championship. Because he keeps saying, like our other former guest, Billy Wright, he wants to be the oldest champion of the world. He's only 45.
Right.
Maybe he should fight Billy first. Maybe a good fight, Billy and Charlie. Billy Wright, bro.
Yeah, we would have almost a century in the ring. Almost a century.
And actually, today I was trying to get in on the conference call between for the fight between Bermaine Stiverne and Deontay Wilder. So I was going to ask Don King how he keeps his hair like that. He was going to be on the call, too. That's his last hurrah. That's his last championship, so he's going to hold on to that. So we'll see how that fight goes. That's a big one. And maybe Billy can get the winner of that. Or Antonio, one of the two. One of our former guests will probably get that fight eventually. Bad news for Anthony Crolla. Taken to the hospital with a serious head injury and a broken ankle after an altercation with two intruders on Tuesday night. Burglars next door to his house in the UK. 28 years old, he's taken to the hospital where he's awaiting a scan in stable condition. That's what drives me nuts about scumbags, you know. It's the holiday season. Scumbags still come out and do this shit, mess with people. You know, why can't just people just earn an honest living, for Christ's sake? And you know, this guy is getting ready for a title challenge against a guy called Hank Lundy in Boston. Thanks, I was there. Richard Abreu, a very controversial fight. Abreu and his father were convinced they won the fight, and Hank got the decision. Another fight almost broke out. But Crolla was supposed to be fighting Abreu on the 23rd for Abreu's belt now. He's got a world title belt, WBA title. So this is pretty bad news. Even though the guy could have been killed and he's still alive, his trainer said that, just spoken to him on the phone, and he's heartbroken. He's all plastered up and waiting for a CT scan. His title dream is gone. Whether he will ever get another shot at it in the future, I don't know. His dreams are tatters. Coming from a guy who's broken his ankle himself, that's not an easy injury to come just put behind you and come back from. So, best of luck to Crowley, but that sucks. Bah humbug for the scumbags who didn't do this guy. Get a real job. Anyway, so that just came out today. Let's see what else. We got the big UFC fights over the weekend. We got some coming up. Carla Esparza turned out to be not even the favorite for this fight because Rose had such a buzz going in. Even though she was only 2-1 going into this fight. But Carla just basically weathered the early storm and used her complete game to win the fight. Got a rear naked choke in the third round. And it was an entertaining fight, I think, but just shows you Rose has a lot of work to do on conditioning, number one. I think she just kind of hit a wall. An adrenaline dump, you could say. Kind of like her fiancé did. Another famous fight. This is Brock Lesnar. That was an interesting bout for sure. And Carla Esparza is now going to have to face a pretty tough challenger, Polish girl who fought the next night, but we'll get to that later. Charles Oliveira had a pretty intense win over Jeremy Stevens. Talk about Gumby, man. Stevens was trying to pull himself out of all kinds of submissions. Just never looked like he was in the fight, but also somehow managed to look like he was never out of it. At the same time, Oliveira is trying everything, bending him every which way. Stevens at one point looked like he was done for, just somehow twisted around, got his arm out of an armbar. Great fight. Then we had a no contest due to an accidental eye poke. Darren Cruikshank had his eye poked and stopped the fight with KJ Nunes there. No contest. I guess it could have been worse, though. I heard a story this week. I didn't read it, but I saw the headline about a guy who got his eye kicked right out of his head. It turned out to be a prosthetic eye, but still. Yeah, knocked out. The eyeball just got kicked right out. Fell out in the cage.
Yeah, Dana made the comment after that Cruikshank fight that there should be some penalties given for these eye pokes. In fact, there was a threat on the Underground, and it had the eye poke happening, and it was the head of Mo Howard that was delivering the eye poke. I don't know what the solution is to it. I mean, because
yeah.
Most of these things, I believe, are accidental. I think there's very few guys doing that on purpose. That might change January 3rd with Jones and Cormier, but I think for the most part, no one's deliberately doing that.
We also have Joe Proctor losing by submission, guillotine choke in the first round with a little less than 30 seconds left in that round. We had Jessica Penne beat Randa Markos. That was a tough fight for Markos. Slipped in early again. Was a situation where conditioning might have been a factor. When she kind of got slammed awkwardly and ended up with a cut over her eye. Seemed to be really running out of speed after that. Just lost a split decision there in that fight. It was definitely a war. I'm looking forward to seeing both girls fight again. Felice Herrig talked a lot about Lisa Ellis not being in her class before this fight, but Ellis gave her pretty much everything she could handle for the first couple rounds until Herrig ended up with an armbar submission, which was partially aided by some hair pulling. I don't know what the legality of that is with these girls with their long hair and braids and shit, but she's definitely yanking on that ponytail a little bit. Got a little help from that to get that armbar submission. Then we had the grudge match. Literally, Heather Clark pissed off at Beck Rawlings, and she got her unanimous decision win there, Heather, over her house bully, I guess you could call her. Then we had Joanne Calderwood. She got a very impressive win over Siouxsie Ham. Getting the unanimous decision there. Just looked great with the striking and everything all around. Great game. And a match that I was really disturbed by, to tell you the truth, was on the preliminaries. Everything was on free TV on this card because it was Fox, Fox Sports 1. But this was an early, I think this was like the only early fight they showed. Tichy Torres over Angela Magana. And this girl, Angela Magana, if you watch the show, shows out, she shows up at the Fighter House straight from Thailand, where obviously you go to train Muay Thai, right? Not really any knees, no Muay Thai clinches in this fight. She's going in against this girl, Tisha Torres, who's a little compact, muscular girl, doesn't have a lot of reach. So you think Magana might use some of her Muay Thai boxing skills. Maybe use her reach, maybe some kicks, but she looked like she never fought in her life in this fight at certain points. Just totally embarrassing, I think, on her part. I mean, she looked like she didn't belong in the house, on the show, in the UFC, period. I mean, I don't think they'll ever call her back for another fight after that. And No excuse. I mean, Tisha is not that dynamic that she's going to shut you down like that to where you can't even compete, period. I'm sure she's capable of doing that to somebody, but she didn't do that in this fight. She was just basically using one right hand, and Tisha's pretty bad in her own right in some respects, because she doesn't even have a jab. If you watch that fight, she did not use her jab at all to actually do any damage. She just basically put the left hand out there to gauge her right hand, where it's going to go. Never landed that left hand with any power whatsoever. She didn't even throw it right. She's like kind of throwing it up straight up in the air, not at the opponent's face at all, or body, anything. She's just kind of putting it out there almost palm first. So both of these girls need some big help with their game. But Maganya, especially, should be embarrassed. Coming from Thailand, not even a single Muay Thai clinch, really, until the very end at all. And she didn't do anything. So she played right into Tisha's game. Tisha just kept landing these huge right hands and bloodied her up good. Used a little bit of her wrestling. Tisha, Tony, you'd like her because her nickname is the Tiny Tornado.
Well, that's her name.
She's the Tiny Tornado Torres. I think with the right training, she could do well with this sport, but there's a lot of holes with the bad jabs and all kinds of stuff. Anyway. Then we had Tom's buddy, Stipe Miocic, and Junior Dos Santos in the main event on Saturday. And what a fight that was.
Wow.
Again, though, kind of reminded me of the Mexicutioner there.
Yeah, that was, my comment on that one, and it was kind of hard for me to be completely objective, and I'll admit that. I mean, that's why you try to recluse yourself from, you know, a fight where there's a conflict of interest. But I felt that Stipe definitely won the first two rounds. I mean, the first one was close, but I think he had the edge. In the second round, he looked great. I mean, he was really busting Junior up. And of the last three, I'm not going to say it was a robbery, but I would have liked to have seen one of those at least, maybe, you know, possibly a split decision. And two judges had it, what, 49 to 46? I don't know what they were seeing.
Yeah. I don't know the scoring. I don't score fights myself that much, so I don't know. Usually if it's a very, very controversial decision, I might watch a fight again and try to figure out.
Right, and that I haven't done that yet myself. I haven't seen it again. But I will say from a lot of the fallout afterwards that Stipe's stock definitely went up. I don't think the loss hurt him that terribly much. And I think there's a lot of questions on Junior because he supposedly had changed camps. And was it that, what is it, Nuevo or Navo? The one in Rio with Pedernales. Yeah, a lot of the top-notch guys are there. And it's where Aldo trains and Burrell. And I didn't see anything different from the guy. I mean, everything was pretty much the same, a lot of weightlifting and boxing, and he didn't seem to really have a diversified strike attack. I didn't see anything on the ground, nothing. So
I think he used to leave Brazil and go to Philadelphia spend it with Tony on the heavy
there
bag.
You go. Yeah.
Right. He doesn't know how to protect his head, number one. And the guy must have a steel plate in his forehead because he just took so many shots and just still kept wading forward with his hands down. And really the only way he stayed in that fight was because he kept landing these crazy haymakers, literally. Like, you know, boxers really, there's no lesson on how to throw a haymaker. You know, because that's what amateurs do. You know, there's hooks, there's uppercuts. There's all kinds of traditional punches you learn when you start boxing. And, you know, haymakers really, they're for movies. But somehow Junior Dos Santos makes them work.
Yeah, it's almost like, hey, I'm going to throw a right hand. I'm going to throw a right hand. Watch. I'm pulling back now. Here it comes. Yeah.
And he's fighting hands in his chest the whole fight and just got battered and beaten all over the cage before he ended up with the decision win. Both guys were stumbling around. Stipe looked like he had a broken jaw. I mean, like, it was really reminded me of Matyushenko versus Joey Beltran, where I just blasted both guys for bad defense. But Stipe actually had a great game. He kind of kept his hands low towards the end of the fight when he was losing energy. But, you know, he has a great boxing game. He has great boxing skills. Just wasn't all there.
And I think a lot of the problem was Junior's takedown defense was just on a whole nother level, and Stipe just could not get the fight to the ground that often. And when he did, he couldn't keep it there. And I think he expended a ton of energy, and then that left hand that Junior landed in the third round really took a lot out of Stipe. I mean, I was kind of concerned he wasn't getting up from that. He hung on, but you know, he's just got to get back to the drawing board.
One of those fights that makes you feel bad for both guys. You're going, jeez, you know, how did these guys even get through a career when they have fights like that?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And if I'd ever meet Junior, I would say, you know, normally I'm a big fan of yours, but in this case, I was cheering for Stipe, but not against you. you know, he seems like a good guy, but I just didn't want him to pull it off Saturday. But he did, and we'll see what happens. But I just think that he's delusional about fighting Cain for a fourth time. My opinion at this point, I'm not seeing anything that would say that there'd be a different result.
I don't want to see it. You know, I don't even want to see him get in with anybody again. I mean, obviously, he's still got a marketable name, a good record. This is his career. Got to think about your brain at some point, you know. So if he doesn't learn to keep his hands up, I don't want to see him fight anybody again. But it's tough to imagine anybody you can put him in there against is going to be an easy win with that style too. To just kind of put up confidence a little more. Really, there's nobody really out there who's not going to at least try to knock him out, get a few shots in, and you know that second impact syndrome is what you really got to worry about. Go back to training too soon, or you know, the worst damage can sometimes happen when you're just sparring. You know, 2 weeks from now, he could be sparring some back damage because of all that damage. So I worry about that, but you know, hopefully he's got some good doctors. He gets a lot of that Reebok money. Co-main event was pretty uneventful. Nate Diaz, talk about a problem child. He missed weight. He walked out of the pre-fight interview after one question. He didn't answer the question. What else did he do? He badmouthed the UFC's CM Punk deal. And he's been complaining about money for months. So you think he'd go out there and want to make a statement against Rafael Dos Anjos? Well, he's just a bet pretty bad. You know, to the point where even in the third round, as he's losing the fight, in the closing seconds, he starts slapping Dos Anjos in the face.
Well, I don't understand this missing weight. I mean, no one ever said cutting weight was easy. Of course it's hard. But when you make an agreement, you're a professional, even as an amateur. How many times have the three of us had to suffer to make weight as amateurs?
Yeah.
Let alone the pros. I mean, I, and what, 5.5 pounds overweight? I don't know. And you know, the sad thing is he gave an interview afterwards where he was talking about, not the one that was televised, but there was another interview that he gave, and he was talking about how he's not happy with this Reebok thing, that it's almost like the UFC wants to start a cult, make us all one and the same and stuff. So I love his attitude, but something's got to change. I mean, if he's going to stick around and be a force, something's got to change.
Well, basically his argument was, I needed the money, I need to eat, and I was injured coming into this fight, and I don't have the right training, because I'm not making enough money. Just all kinds of excuses, one after another.
Well, okay, but how much money does it cost to make weight? It cost him $10,000 to not make weight. that's kind of a strange. I don't know who his CPA is, but
you know. Not to say that Rafael Dos Anjos is not that great, just because he beat a guy who didn't look that good, but yeah, he just totally destroyed Diaz. I mean, just wrecked him with the leg kicks, number one. And like I said, Nate was trying to slap him at the end of the fight in the face while they're, you know, wrapped up in a pretzel on the ground somewhere. And I loved how Dos Anjos just turned it right around back on him and started slapping him.
Well, and, you know, and now that you mention that about the leg kicks, I mean, at the very least, try to block these things. I mean, there are techniques to do it. I'm not saying it's easy, but he wasn't even trying. And I don't care who you are, you cannot keep eating those kicks, or those hard leg kicks, time after time after time. And then when he had to switch stances, I knew it was getting to him, and yet he just wasn't trying to block them. I don't get it. I mean, doesn't he have a Muay Thai coach? Just don't understand it.
And Dos Anjos, I think, has pretty much earned his title shot with that performance. He talked after the fight, actually, about how pissed off he was about Diaz missing weight and, you know, just all the smack talk before the fight. And he really wanted to make a statement, and he definitely did.
Yeah. I don't blame him for being upset. I mean, to me, it's so disrespectful to your opponent and to the sport, and to yourself, when you miss weight, especially by that much. Ridiculous.
I did a story, too, over the week about the Diaz brothers in general and their attitude towards fighting. I mean, obviously they're from a dysfunctional family, and I think they obviously have similar traits as far as their mental situation. They both have anxiety, I think, with these interviews. They don't like interviews. I think Nate is a little better than Nick, but I think they're almost afraid of their own feelings because, you know, every time it seems they're in these interviews, it always comes back to the point of, you know, I don't even know why I'm doing this. What am I doing here?
Well, then that's the question. I can sympathize with, you know, I mean, I can sympathize with them if they have a problem with that. But what do you do about your weaknesses? You attack them, and you get better, and you get some help, and you work on it. It's the least they could do. That the interviews are a part of the game. I mean, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but fight promotion's what it's all about.
Well, I don't know. They're kind of turning into, like, they got, like, the Tank Abbott attitude now, I think. Like, they're hanging out at a bar, and they need money, and somebody says, hey, I'll fight you. Okay. You know, because they've said all these times, I don't even like fighting. Both of them have said this. I don't like fighting, but I just do it for the money. And, you know, here's two guys that are really good at it when they put their serious effort into it. And a lot of people love them just because, like you said, some of it's their attitude and the way they challenge authority and make good points while they do it sometimes.
Yeah.
But then they have this other side where they're just so disrespectful to people and they just rub decent people the wrong way because they're just so crass. Like the whole Stockton slap thing that they do. They don't just slap you in these fights. They slap you and then they say shit to you. That's
209, bitch. 209, yeah. Bitch. Yeah. I don't know. What I wish these guys could realize that it's a short career. You're only young once. And right now, every day that goes by, they're just blowing it.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't get it. I mean, I definitely love fighting. I could say, you know, do I want to make a career out of it? No, obviously not, because I'm not doing that. But you know, there was a time where I could have made a career out of it, and I would have never been at that point where, you know, I'm telling myself, why am I doing this? Or I'm asking myself, why am I doing this? Because I know, you know, I can compute that in my mind, why I'm doing it. But these guys just, they just don't have that that understanding of themselves, I guess. I think they're literally afraid of their own minds.
Well, then the question is, what drives them to get up in the morning and do their road work? What drives them to go to the gym day in and day out and put up with all the deprivation, the shoving the good food away? You've got to know why you're doing it. I mean, I'm even more.
It's because that's all they have now. I mean, they both are like bitter old people looking back on what they should have done. You know, trying to tell a young person, like, you know, this is how it should be for you because I fucked it all up. You know, so I think it's, they're at that stage where they're reluctant fighters. Like, they don't want to fight, but they know they have to because that's the skill set they have. That's the situation they're in. There's no other opportunities coming to them. So this is what they have to do, but at the same time, they're not going to just sit there and be like, pretend like, you know, they're the loyal UFC poster child for, you know, getting along with authority. They're going to buck the system, they're going to be characters, and they're going to bitch and moan and complain about having to be fighters, even though that's what they chose. So,
well, what's the old cliche? If you're just doing this for the money and just hanging around, that is not a recipe for a happy ending. And both you guys know that.
Yeah, I found that. Diaz brothers. We got plenty more to talk about on this card alone. We got Alistair Overeem beat Stefan Struve. He's back on the map there with a TKO knockout. Struve didn't look good. I thought that was like a lose-lose town fight, but Struve might stick around. Still kind of on the comeback from this little heart issue. Matt Mitrione says he's reinvented himself. Got a beautiful TKO from punches off on Gabriel Gonzaga in the first round. So looks pretty good there. And we had the contender match for the Carla Esparza's new belt. Joanna Jędrzejczyk, probably fucking that one up, fought Claudia Gadella, and Joanna put on a striking clinic, really. She got the split decision win, but just looked so tough in there, hanging through the most brutal striking that Claudia had. They ended up getting in a head clash. Claudia got all cut up on the side of her eye, like a horseshoe type cut. It's really bad. Bleeding everywhere. And Joanna had blood all over at the end of it, and waving her pose flag. Man, what a fight.
Yeah.
I loved one. That was one of my favorite fights of the whole weekend. Joanna got the win. A big upset. Gadella was supposed to be the best of the best at that weight class. Somehow, for some reason, she didn't want to do the show. So she didn't end up on with all the other girls, but she thought she was going to get this win and jump right into that belt opportunity, but now she's going to have to rebuild again, so we'll see how that goes. But definitely a worthy opponent. She tried. She got one judge at least, but Joanna just had a little bit more dynamic striking. She kind of reminded me of a female Clay Guida in there, but better. we had John Moraga beat Willie Gates by rear naked choke in the third round. A very odd win for Ben Saunders. Ended up cranking Joe Riggs' neck. And Joe tapped out, even though it wasn't even a submission. Just trying to hold on to him, and Joe just tapped out because he felt something pop in his neck. But he looked all right, especially for a guy who just shot himself not too long ago. And we had Drew Dober beat Jamie Varner by rear naked choke. Brian Barberina beat Joe Ellenberger by TKO in a fight Ellenberger was winning. That was kind of a shocker. David Michaud beat Garrett Whiteley by unanimous decision. Henry Cejudo beat Dustin Kimura by unanimous decision. And Ian Entwistle beat Anthony Burchak by heel hook submission. Pretty good one for that. Back to boxing. We have a confession. Mickey Rourke's opponent, Elliot Seymour, has confessed to taking a dive, $15,000. And he says he hasn't got his final $5,000 yet. Kind of pissed off. He got the $10,000 up front. He made the first $10,000 up front, I guess, and then he said he still has not got the $5,000 that he was supposed to get after he backed. He was specifically told not to hit Rourke in the face and that the plan was to effectively choreograph the entire fight up until the body shot finish, or the ass cheek shot finished. The best line of this whole article is, I'm not sure boxing can truly recover from a scandal like this. Jamie Varner has retired following his loss. Decided he's done. He also said he wants to start a fighters union, so
I don't know if he's going to join this lawsuit, but you know, whatever happens as a result of that could, like I said, result in a union. So they might contact him at some point. He says, I would love to start some type of union for fighters. Sport is growing, and we're getting all these big-time endorsement deals, and a lot of us, we're just fighters. We don't think about the next step. I think if we implemented some sort of union or something like that, we could eventually, fighters, this could be a real career. I see so many pro fighters now, and I want to help the future of fighters. He also said, we are a mainstream major sport now, and if you look at all the mainstream major sports, they all have unions, and they have league minimums and some sort of retirement plan. And all that kind of stuff. I think that's something that can happen to the fighters because this is one of those careers that when it's over, a lot of these guys don't have something else. And there you go. That's just what we talked about with the Diaz brothers. Obviously, they don't have something else. So, all the more important to have protections in place for these guys. Whether it's a union, I don't know if that's that great of an idea. And these union companies, you know, you just look at the Station Casino situation. Even as much as I hate those guys that run the company, the union people that are going against them are even worse in some respects because they're spending all these people's union dues on useless campaigns to try to change Station Casino's mind when they're not going to change their mind. They're going after companies like the UFC that are totally really unrelated to Station Casinos. And unions aren't the answer, you know, especially these big established unions. I think it would be more along the lines that, you know, to improve the sport, probably want to adopt something like a Bill of Rights for fighters, kind of like Ted Kennedy did with the healthcare Bill of Rights years ago, patients' Bill of Rights. You have the airline passengers' Bill of Rights, for Christ's sake. You know, if you get on a fucking plane, you have certain rights that were passed by Congress. So why can't you get fighters' bill of rights to prevent these fighters from being, what's the word? Not obscured, but basically taken advantage of.
Exploited.
Exploited, yes. That's the word. We're going to prevent them from being exploited. So there's got to be some kind of way to do that without having this huge union put together where fighters are negotiating for treatment. It should be understood. And like I said, a Bill of Rights or something's got to be done with a pension fund, maybe. The boxing does that. A lot of boxing organizations have pension funds. It would be a great idea. But something's got to be done so these guys are taken care of after the fact. Because right now, while the system's in place with no regulations and nobody watching out, the FTC's not doing anything about the UFC's monopoly situation, these type of lawsuits are the only way to do anything about it, to force change. You know, I hope it's successful, but at the same time, I really hope they do it the right way so that whatever happens as a result is real change and not just the UFC going, oh, well, you know, we got sued for this, so we got to make it more impossible for people to sue us in the future. We got to make a contract so that people can't sue us instead of, oh, well, how do we change so people can sue us? There's one that, I think I sent both of you guys, at least one of you guys. There's a guy that decided he
wanted a win on his record, so he got a mentally ill person to fight him in an unregulated MMA fight. And then he put the knockout blow on his Facebook profile. That's his profile. Now this guy owns a kickboxing gym, and he's a champion jiu-jitsu wrestler. He met this guy, the mentally challenged guy, through a friend, drove him to the match, promised him $50 and a medal, and this guy thought that he was just going to wrestle, and they did an MMA fight. Now, this guy is on disability, cannot read or write, and his family says he's mentally disabled. Kickboxing is obviously not regulated in Wisconsin. We had this whole discussion over Duke Rufus's gym. This guy, Jesse Roach, 31 years old, with mental disabilities that are so severe he cannot read and receives payments from the federal government. But he was allowed to step into the ring at a Milwaukee, Wisconsin Harley-Davidson dealership with a veteran fighter. And the guy drove him to the fight, promised to pay him $50 and give him a medal, left him there, didn't pay him the $50, and didn't give him the medal on top of all this. What a scumbag, huh?
Yeah,
47 seconds into the fight with a blow to the head. Knocked out. Left him there. Didn't pay him his $50. And the guy never got his medal, of course. So, had to find a way home. The promoter ended up paying the guy his $50. Felt bad.
But he still didn't get his medal, did he? Still didn't get his medal.
Still did not get as well. You know, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, nothing wrong with a guy who's mentally challenged fighting. If he's fighting somebody that's kind of along the same competition, if that makes him feel better, if that's what he wants to do, no problem with that. But to put a guy like that in a fight that's actually in front of an audience. I don't think that's a good idea, you know. Even if you're putting him in against somebody with comparable experience, you know, do it in the gym, but maybe not at a public event. So to just do this to this guy and then plaster it all over your Facebook, and then there's no repercussions. That's the worst part. There's nothing anybody can do about this except ridicule the guy who did it to this dude. You know, and maybe flame him a little on Facebook. Unbelievable. These guys knew each other, too. They actually previously fought in a mixed martial arts fight years ago before the state regulated that, and Roach was knocked out in the first round of that one. I guess this was a kickboxing fight. The guy that did it to him said it was just for fun. It was meant to be a sparring match, not a real fight. He said he didn't promise Roach cash or a medal, but did admit that he gave a ride to the fight. Unreal. It is real. Anyway, what do we get going on for boxing matches this weekend, Tony? Anything?
I'm
going to
take a little bit of that last weekend. There's a couple of people who tried going on UCLA and chasing. I'm only got to see a handful of it. But the UCLA card was better. We talked a little bit about the Amir Khan and Devin Alexander fight. Unfortunately, I missed this main event because I had to step back from work and I was a little tired. The Amir Khan basically was playing safety first. And over the first 4 months, I said the only way he could get a Mayweather fight and would make money is because he has such a big following in England. The fight with Timothy Bradley and Diego Chavez, that was a fight that, if you remember my prediction, I think I said there was going to be a lot of headbutts early, and there was. That was a fight not even so Bradley should have won. It was a draw. So I guess he knows what it's like to be on the receiving end of a bad decision now.
I guess so. We got another UFC fight coming up this weekend as well. Lyoto Machida versus CB Dalloway in the main event. event. But staying on boxing for a minute here, the Floyd Mayweather versus Manny Pacquiao thing. Mayweather, for his part, is insisting that it has to happen on Showtime. And then obviously there's going to be some other insistences or else this fight would have already happened. But he appears to be, you know, making that the sticking point. This has got to be on Showtime, which obviously is not going to happen. It's going to have to be a cooperative thing between HBO and Showtime because Bob Arum has agreements with Showtime and Floyd has agreements with HBO. And I've heard all kinds of reports that saying networks, both networks, are perfectly okay with working with each other. But how then does Floyd come out and say it has to be on Showtime, if that's true? Unless he doesn't want the fight to happen. And he's going to use that as an excuse. Oh, well, they didn't want Showtime, so we couldn't do it. To me, it's stupidity on his part, because there's so much money to be made. I mean, give an inch, please. I mean, make it happen, because it makes no sense to sit there and say, oh, well, you know, it's the conditions, unless you really do not want to fight. Because either way, you know, you're going to be making $100 million. Easy. Especially if they do the Abu Dhabi deal there that that guy's promising. Well, that's at least $100 million. So, just a no-brainer to me. And then, obviously, the money is going to be a sticking point, too, because he mentioned that, you know, Manny Pacquiao was out there thinking, you know, he should get the same percentage that he got before when we were going to do this fight, and it never happened. But now he's a diminished fighter, so he should be getting even less of a percentage. Yeah, it's just unfortunate that a guy with that much money is going to make this about money. And not about legacy. And it just makes another point that he's obviously, his legacy is not that great if he's worried about this fight tainting it or, you know, can't even sign this fight because for whatever reason he doesn't want it to happen. I think it will happen, though. I think enough people will pressure him into doing it.
It's going to happen before they get in the ring with Walkers and Canes. It's a question.
I think so. So, well, number one, I don't think Floyd's going to make it to the point where he's got a Walker. Somebody's going to shoot that guy.
Okay.
Actually, you know, it's not even a joke. I think he saw one of his friends kill himself a couple weeks ago, I think. He was on FaceTime with a guy that he knew, and the guy shot his wife and then himself on the computer while Floyd was watching. And, Jesus Christ, you know, that's got to be something that sticks with you for a while, so it must have been pretty traumatic. But I can see Floyd fucking a situation like that. Not saying the right thing, you know? Somebody was, you know, actually... a compassionate person in that situation might be able to kind of unravel it in a good way. I think he could have just said, hey, you know, I'll give you $1 million if you put the gun down. I'm writing the check right now. Having my guy bring it over. So, Mayweather versus Pacquiao, I think it's going to happen, but it is going to take a lot of negotiation and tweaking. You know, something's going to be done there. Obviously, I don't think it's going to come down to Manny fighting for Mayweather promotions or, you know, totally getting rid of Bob Arum. I think that's over with. I think he's given up that condition. But, you know, if it comes down to having to be on Showtime, that might be a deal breaker, so we'll work that out. We got the big UFC fight night, though. Machida versus Dolloway, and then I'm going to check Box Rec. I think that's about it for us. But, CB Dolloway is 15-5, fighting Lyoto Machida, who's 21-5. Both of these guys are kind of entering that journeyman category. probably not going to be involved in many title shots for the rest of their careers, unless they go to other organizations. But this is a main event, and you know, obviously they're evenly matched, both of them five losses. I'd say Machida's faced the better competition over the years, but CB is very capable of beating them at the same time, so it should be entertaining. This is in Brazil, too, so Machida's obviously going to be the favorite, fighting in front of his home crowd. We've got another Brazilian, Ian Barral, in the co-main event. He's 32-2, fighting Mitch Gagnon, who's 12-2. And if he happens to, Barral happens to slip and bang his head in the tub this time, at least he won't have to pay travel expenses to go to this fight. This is a big climb back into the mix for him, fighting Mitch Gagnon, who's 12-2, and being in a co-main event, trying to prove that he really did deserve that title shot, second opportunity. So definitely looking forward to how he does this. Does with this opportunity. And we have Patrick Cummins, 6-1, fighting Antonio Carlos Jr., who's 4-0. Rashid Magomedov, who's 17-1, fighting Elias Silverio. Eric Silva, 16-5, fighting Mike Rhodes, who's 6-3. We got Tom Ninamaki, 21-7-1, fighting Renato Carneiro, who's 8-0-1. Marcos Rogério de Lima, 12-2-1, fighting Igor Pokrzyjak, who's 25-11. We've got Antonio Dos Santos Jr., 6-1, fighting Daniel Sarafian, 8-5. Hakran Diaz, who's 21-3-1, fighting Darren Elkins, who's 18-4. Sounds like it belongs on the main event. It's only the fourth fight of the night. Leandro Issa, 12-4, fighting Yuta Sasaki, who's 18-1-2. We got Tim Means, 21-6-1, fighting Marcio Alexander Jr., 12-1. Jake Collar, 8-1, fighting Vitor Miranda, 9-4. And I just closed box right by accident. Whoops. And that's pretty much the only event going on, the only big MMA event going on this weekend. So, check boxing. Give me a minute here, we'll get the boxing schedule up. In Arizona. I don't want to hear about it. Shittiest pop up. All the sites I have to deal with. That's got to be the worst pop up situation. Except for First Row Sports, where I watch all my free paper events.
Knockout fighting Leonard Dan
3 and 2 KT knockouts at the welterweight. And we've got a couple other stuff on this card. Andre Drell at 2-8, 23-1, 16 knockouts, putting Derek Edwards, 27-3-1, 14 knockouts. Title fight, light heavyweight. 6-0 with 6 knockouts, fighting Jeff Page Jr., 15-0 with 10. The NABA light heavyweight, the NAPO light heavyweight. IMDF, North American heavyweight title. We're fighting for a light heavyweight title and in the same fight. It's perfect.
Says it's for the vacant IBF North American heavyweight title. It's probably. What else
we got going on? Gotta go to Saturday.
WBO Continental Light Heavyweight Tournament.
It's like all the light heavyweights are fighting this weekend.
Dominic Bosillo Light Heavyweight is on this card. It was a 10-round fight. He's 16 and 0 with 5 knockouts fighting Marat. Fight's pulling
a lot of titles on the line down in Mexico over the weekend, of course. No light heavyweights there. Lots of little guys. Featherweights, middleweights, cruiserweight, well, one cruiserweight fight. One fat Mexican, I guess.
Cruiserweights. Mirko Larghetti, 21-1 with 13 knockouts versus Peter Hegyes, who's 8-11. Oh, wait, that's Italy. That's not the Mexico fight. I'm lagging on Italy. What happened there? Tony's favorite fighter is in action this weekend.
Who's that?
Who's that? Ricardo Mayorga, fighting in Nicaragua. Your boy, 38-1. 30 wins, 8 losses, 1 draw, 24 knockouts. He's fighting Hendrik Saraligui, who's 7-1. He's the main event. Co-main event is super flyweights. Jose Perez, 12-0 with 10 knockouts, fighting Roberto Lopez, who's 31-25-1 with 12 knockouts. That Mexico card that I skipped over. Main event there is Brian Vasquez. He's 33-1 with 17 knockouts, fighting Sergio Thompson, who's got 30 wins, 3 losses, and 26 knockouts. That's for the interim WBA super featherweight title. And the WBC silver minimum weight title is on the line when Carlos Ortega meets Ricardo Perez. Ortega's 10-3-2 with 4 knockouts. Perez is 6-2. It'd be a pretty big deal to get your first title before your 10th fight. Perez wins 6-2. Even though it's a silver title. Still a pretty big deal, I guess. And we got a Jesus fight of the week. Juan Jesus Rivera, 27-11, with 17 knockouts, fighting Silverio Ortiz, 33-14, with 15 knockouts. What else we got? Puerto Rico, Saturday. We got McJoe Arroyo, 15-0, with 8 knockouts, fighting Mark Anthony Geraldo, who's 31-4-3, with 14 knockouts. And also, the vacant World Female Light Middleweight title is on the line between Hannah Gabriel, 13-1-1 with 9 knockouts, and Patty Ramirez, who's 10-1 with 5 knockouts. And I'm pretty sure that about does it this weekend. There is another one. On Saturday, Showtime actually has a couple fights on Saturday. Jesus Marcelo, another Jesus fight of the week. This is the Jesus fight of the week because it's a title, I guess. Jesus Marcelo Andres Queller, who's 25-1 with 19 knockouts, fighting Ruben Tamayo, who's 25-4-4 for the interim WBA World Featherweight title. It's from Washington State. And Dominic Wade is also on the card. He's undefeated 16-0 with 11 knockouts, fighting Eddie Hunter. 10-11-2 with 3 knockouts. We got featherweight Gary Russell Jr., 24-1 with 14 knockouts, fighting Christopher Martin, who's 28-4-3. And Anthony Peterson is actually on this card. He was supposed to face a better opponent, but his opponent got hurt or replaced in the last second here. So now Peterson, 34-1 with 22 knockouts, is fighting Hector Velazquez, who's 56-24. 38 knockouts and 3 draws. And also on the card, Julius Jackson, 18-0 with 14 knockouts, fighting Jonathan Nelson, who's 19-1 with 9 knockouts, super middleweight. Should be a great fight there. We got Julian Williams, 17-0-1 with 10 knockouts, fighting Jamar Freeman, who's 13-3-2 with 7 knockouts. And we also have Tony Harrison, also undefeated, 18-0 with 15 knockouts, fighting Tyrone Brunson, who's 22-3-1 with 21 knockouts. So that's a big step up for middleweight Tony Harrison. He needs some good luck and good head movement to keep himself from getting knocked out by Brunson.
Brunson started off like gangbusters. Brunson started like winning literally his first 18 or 19 fights by first round knockout. We've talked about him before. So I was following his career, the Philadelphia guy. And then once he started getting past that first round, into the second and the third, he really started struggling. That's when he had a couple of those losses come in. And he gave a pretty good showing on himself in his last fight on a very close losing effort. Brunson's got power. He's just never really developed himself with a second and third game plan.
All right. We got some fights in Phoenix. Heavyweight Andy Ruiz Jr., 23-0 with 17. I had a fight game, but he's on a comeback. He's 26-6 with 16 knockouts in Akovich. No title on the line. Light heavyweights, the co-main event, Trevor McCombie, 17-0 with 13 knockouts, versus Milton Nunes, who's 28-11 with 25 knockouts and 1 draw. That's about it for that card. Somebody else we got fights in Colorado. That's a great day. Sunday. That fight's on Sunday in Croatia. Main event here from Croatia. 4-round welterweight fight. Jovica Kokot, who's 0-5, versus Eden Hadrick, who's 0-3.
How'd you like that for your main event?
Somebody's always got to go. Yeah.
It's one of three fights on the card where somebody's O has got to go. We've got 0-2 versus 0-3 middleweight. And one of them, the 0-2 guys, both of them are by knockout. The 0-3 guys, 2 out of 3 are by knockout. So then we got 0-4 versus 0-1, all knockouts there, losses.
Oh, man. You know what? I'd love to promote that card. I would sell that card great. I'd be like, come, you know, to the fight scene, wherever tonight, Croatia, come. You know, it's the somebody's got to win card. You can't lose them all.
Right.
Of course, hey, just think if we had a bunch of draws, so the O's would stay.
You know what would be great? It's like they have like these fights, you guys are 0-whatever versus 0-whatever. And I can see the winner getting consoled in the locker room, like, you can't lose them all.
And of course, you know, every week.
Even the best of us, or even the worst of us win sometimes.
And of course, you know, you can't go a week without seeing some opponent with an outrageous record of losses. Over in the UK on Sunday, a guy named Jason Nesbitt will be looking for his 185th loss of his career. He is 10-184-4 with 7 knockouts wins. Jason Nesbitt.
He has 7 knockout wins?
7 knockout wins, 10 wins total. 184 losses.
It's pretty bad enough to be like those 10 guys. Which is probably like 3 guys that didn't fall
out.
It's got to be one of those 10 guys. Yeah. But it's really got to be good to be one of the 7 guys that you knocked out.
He's fighting a guy, Tommy Carus, who's 6-2, got no knockouts. So good luck there, buddy. And actually, before our next show, we're going to get a guy from Yemen, who has a record, Ali Raimi. I just read this the other day when we were talking to Billy, before we were talking to Billy Wright, because I was trying to find out who's got the most first-round knockouts in a row. It turns out to be this guy, Ali Raimi. He only fights in Yemen, and he's from Yemen, of course. 24-0 with all 24 by knockouts, and I think 21 of them came on the first round. He's fighting a guy named Hani Ansi here.
The guy we were just discussing, and I can probably get him on the air next time I see him, Tyrone Brunson, won his first professional 18 fights, 18 or 19 fights by first round knockout.
I believe it. This guy obviously fought less than that. Yeah, Ali Raimi, he pretty much fought, every single person he fought was, like, from the area, you know? And, you know, Yemen is not very well-known for boxing contenders, obviously. But mostly guys with less than 10 fights. He does have a lot of undefeated fighters on there. 8-0, 10-0, 6-0. 7-0. But mostly guys, you know, like I said, from the area. So those guys who were all undefeated, 8-0, 7-0, 10-0, they all fought guys who were all from Yemen. So nothing to write home about. This guy Ansi that he's fighting, obviously from the area, Yemen. Hani Ansi, he's 11-0-1 with 9 knockouts. And he's actually going for a title here. This is the vacant Universal Boxing Organization World Flyweight title. And his first round win streak was actually stopped by a guy he fought the fight before. He beat this guy, gave him his first loss, a guy named Prince Maz, 8-0. He fought him once. Back in, July of 2014, this year, right? Prince Maz. So he extended his knockout streak with that win. And then Prince Maz fought him again, very next fight. It took him 7 rounds to beat him that one. Then Prince Maz fought him again, very next fight, in October. Took him 9 rounds to beat him. Then Prince Nance fought him again in November and took him 2 rounds, TKO. So that's where he got his title, the Universal Boxing Organization World Light Flyweight title. Because suddenly the guy got a title between the 3rd and the 4th time you fought him. Or suddenly a title came up for grabs or something. I don't know. I guess they fought for a vacant one. So now that's on the line here in this next one. But yeah, I guess he had the record. I think it was 2021. First round knockout. And with that, I guess we'll end the show a little bit early this week because I don't have any other content unless you guys have anything else to talk about.
One question I was going to ask. Oh, I do have something to bring up. I got an email today. They're going to look at me to be an extra in the new Rocky spinoff movie.
A what?
They're going to look. They're considering me for an extra in the new Rocky spinoff movie based on it's about the grandson of Apollo Creed.
Oh, awesome. Well.
You know,
just pad your resume if you could get down to Providence, Rhode Island tomorrow. I guess the last day for the Vinnie Paz thing.
I was joking with you the one day when I congratulated him at the movie. I'm like, "Hey, you mean yes? Yeah, come on up." I'm like, "Oh shit, I wasn't being serious." I but I would never be not around this time when I'm not when I'm you know doing the trees as well as my regular job. I'd never be able to do it. Not as much as I would love to. I think it's pretty awesome they got Peg Bundy playing his mom.
Oh, really? Is that why she's involved?
Yeah, I think she's playing his mom.
Yeah, because I went by the website. They have this website where you know people can sign up to be in the movie, the Vinnie Paz movie. So, you know, this today actually they were doing it, and tomorrow I think possibly over the weekend too they might have some stuff. I think it's just today and tomorrow that they're wrapping up at the Dunkin' Donuts Center in Rhode Island. They're doing fight scenes there, so they're looking for all kinds of extras to show up in 80s clothes, I guess.
I'd be showing up in my stainwashed jeans. You know, I'd have to get a mullet wig because I can't regrow my mullet. But I have to get like a mullet wig, some stainwashed jeans, maybe a Metallica shirt. I'd be good to go, you know. Maybe one of those like wrist braces with like, little spikes on them and shit, some neon colored sneakers.
I was thinking a turtleneck and a champion sweatshirt, but they said no logos.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, it should be a good deal, and, you know, there's a lot of people in the Rhode Island area that would love to do that and be a part of it, so it's going to be good for them to be able to tell all their friends, hey, there's me right there. The guy with the stupid hat on. It's me.
You know, I've been an extra in 2 movies. One, the last Rocky movie, which you certainly see me on the screen, but I was there. I was on the set for 2 days just seeing... You know, and it was amazing. Like, they filmed the entire market for, like, at least 2 days they were there. And they were, like, showing, like, Rocky walking down the street. They were showing him, like, in the different shops, like, the tea shop, like, getting an order, and, like, the one, like, meat shop, getting an order because it's any other restaurant. And, I mean, they went over these scenes over and over and over. I mean, I'm watching. Then they're telling the people that were, like, okay, you could walk down the street, look what you're shopping, look what you're doing, whatever. And me, I was walking in front of the camera. Then I went to the one fire barrel where like, these 4 black guys were, and I was almost talking to them. I was trying to get myself in front of the camera. And I'm sure they were looking at their picture. I'm like, what happened? And then, what's he getting the photos? Rocky Mega, yo, man. Go to Dago trying to get in my shot. But if you go back, you know, if you see that scene like, early in the movie when they're showing the Italian market, for as much as they shot there, he is there. No, the TV scene is no more than 30 seconds. And I'm like, they did all that for that piece of shit scene? I'm like, oh my God, see, that could film that in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And the one thing that we said about Sylvester Stallone was like, he would always be like a stickler about like taking like so many extra takes. Like another take. If only he did it editing, There's so many things that are screwed up. And one of them that I'll never forget was in Rocky IV. I guess they needed another shot of Apollo in the ring, like Fulton Drago. So he just beat at him, yeah, I want you, you're mine. And he's doing it, and he's not wearing any gloves. And I'm like, did you really not realize that the man didn't have gloves on, and people are going to notice that? He's just over fucking gloves on the guy.
Yeah, I know anything can suck. I mean, last time I was on TV, it was Fox News LA doing a thing on one of my legal situations I was involved in with a lady who killed herself after a doctor performed plastic surgery on her and fucked her up. And she lived with it for years, but then just couldn't take it anymore. And was suing her.
And I remember that was a doctor in Indianapolis, wasn't it? Yeah, I remember the story.
So they put me on Fox News LA. I was out in Vegas at the time, so I went down to the Vegas Fox station, and they interviewed me for like a half an hour. And so this thing comes on, and I'm talking for like 10 seconds.
Yeah, really?
I'm like, what the hell? Where did all the other shit go? And I remember they were like, oh, we might need some B-roll, so let's get you walking around the hallway or whatever.
And you know what's funny about that? I'll tell you who made the best point about it was Mick Foley, the wrestler. You know, in one of his books, he's talking about, like, how many things in this world are faker than pro wrestling? And he's like, news reporting is faker than pro wrestling. Like, they get you to do quotes and do stories, but they don't arrange them the way they want them. And I found that at first hand. And I didn't like it. I did like it. But when I was down at spring training, the first year I came down with that crazy Apollo Creed-looking outfit, and the one reporter from the one major Philadelphia paper saw me, but hey, can you take some pictures for Philly.com? And I'm like, sure. And then he's like, hey, would you mind if we, follow you around the stadium, while you're dressed up like that? I'm like, don't bother me, none. He's like, all right, let's get to the chase. Let me interview you. I'm like, sure. I'm personable enough. So we get on there, and he's asking some questions. And he gives me that suit. And I kept trying to say, everything evolved from me getting a funny hat like 15 years ago, and then I would wear it so often, and then I got a new hat, and it was a lucky hat, and they won the World Series, and it was getting older and falling apart. I ordered this new outfit. He made it look like I hadn't had that outfit for like 10 years. And I'm trying to say in the interview, no, this is brand new. I got it last year, and they lost the first few games I wore it to. This outfit's got to get lucky. And he edited it around to make it look the way he wanted it. And not that I minded the interview, but, it wasn't entirely accurate. And along that, the interview was 2 minutes long, the whole segment. And they literally followed me around, and they interviewed me before the game and after the game for 10 minutes each time. And then followed me around the stadium for, a whole bunch. They got, videos of me walking. He's like, all right, wave at that person. Like, they waved at you. So I waved at somebody and smiled at him and shit. So, I know exactly what you're talking about. But speaking about being on the news, I was trying to get on the news the other night. I don't know if you guys heard about it. You probably haven't, but because it happened in Philadelphia in the suburbs. But a guy, was an Iraqi war veteran, Marine. He's in a custody battle, and he ends up killing his ex-wife, his mother-in-law, his mother-in-law's mother, and then, his brother-in-law, sister-in-law, and then one of their kids, and then ends up injuring the other kid. And it was at three different locations. One location was 2 miles from my house. Where I live, not a whole lot of action goes on. So, that was, not just a big deal, because this guy, and then they found him dead in the woods. He, stabbed himself in the heart or something, whatever. So people are saying, no, just stay behind locked doors or whatever. I'm like, the guy's telling people in his own family, I got to get my lottery numbers. And plus, they got me 38 on me, so I'm not, I'm going out there alone. I'm going to get damn lottery numbers at one pharmacy, which happened to be right next to the police station, so I knew I was going to be safe. So I go over there, and they had every conceivable news truck there because they're about to do a press conference. And I'm like, shit, I'm going to start looking around and see if I can get an interview. I don't feel like I need to go, I can't believe it, man. You don't seem like you're such a nice guy. You used to go to the gym. I went to. I would see him from time to time. seemed like a nice guy. I know he had some problems with his wife, but I never thought this would happen. You know, my mom said, you're not going to say that I'm on bullshit off the main credit. I said, but I didn't care what station it was. NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox News, BET, Telemundo, put me on it.
Yeah, I was there when he slipped out. Then you're going to start getting cops asking questions.
Oh, Rich, well, hold on. Let me ask you, because obviously next Thursday is Christmas and the following Thursday is New Year's. What are we doing?
Oh, man. We're going to have to take 2 weeks off in one of those deals.
I don't know. You tell me.
Well, obviously we're going to take next week off. It's Thanksgiving. I mean, it's Christmas.
Maybe next week we play one of our archive shows.
Yeah, this time. Last time I was not able to snap back away. I never mentioned it because we didn't get on that discussion. But last time, actually, the cable went out. So we couldn't have done a show if we wanted to. So this time, we will have a pre-recorded show that we'll put out there. And we'll preview and everything like that and promote. But it will be a previously recorded show. We'll probably just play the interview portion. And then for New Year's, we'll probably record a show early.
Okay. Just let me know so I can figure out my schedule.
Okay. We'll find a day and we'll figure it out before we get there. But
okay.
Ways off. But it's not New Year's Eve this time. It's New Year's Day. It's kind of different.
Right.
Hangover recovery day.
Yeah, right.
Okay. All right, I guess that's all then. I'm going to get to playing Madden.
Yeah. I'll send you an email too, because I forgot. I got so busy this week.
Yeah.
Guys, have a great holiday, you know, and, you know, we'll be discussing, you know, soon, before the new year.
So I guess Tom
sounds like
a
plan.
Tom should tell us all his predictions for next year now.
Yeah, right.
I'll work on it, okay? I'll get it all tuned up, and it'll be free of charge. What I used to charge people thousands for, okay? All right, guys. Have a Merry Christmas. We'll talk to you next week.
You too.
Sounds good.